Minnesota yesterday?
No. They got a goal. That's what we wanted this tournament. I know people were getting all excited after they did well with Belgium, but mind you, this is the first tournament in 36 years. Did we really think they were going to beat, you know, teams like Belgium and Morocco? Like, Morocco beat Italy. Like, so they're going to be up. They're going to have another tough game. That's my point of view on it.
Yeah, you see, I wanted more than a goal. I never really expected they would qualify and get to the next round. I thought there was a small chance they might, but I got greedy. Once they scored the opening goal, I thought, let's get the win.
You did get greedy, but
that was not the game they were going to win, though. If I thought they were going to win a game, it wouldn't have been that one. I think Morocco would be easier than Croatia. Still not easy, but easier than Croatia. But yeah, I wanted more. I wanted more than a goal.
I see. I think Morocco is going to be the toughest game.
You do, huh? Croatia weren't they in the finals 4 years ago?
Yeah, but Morocco just beat. The reason Italy is not in the World Cup is because Morocco knocked them out.
Well, I know.
Italy won the European Cup just 2 years ago. Now they're missing one of their best players, so it is what it is. But I think Morocco just beat Belgium 2-0.
That was shocking, huh?
I think they're very underrated.
Not to you, it sounds like.
I don't know too much about. So I watch a little bit of Serie A, which is like one of the leagues over there. So I follow a little bit, but not a whole lot.
Well, you could have lowered our expectations then going into the weekend, PJ.
But I got excited too. I thought they played really well. And then once it was like 3-1, or like once Croatia started, you know, getting like, you know, they had that one kick, that one goal overturned, I was like, I could smell it. I was like, there's sharks in the water, sharks smelling the blood. Is that the saying?
I was like, you know, in any sport, or just about any sport, once you're playing from behind and you have to press, then the risk is it couldn't get out of hand, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
But you have no choice. Now you're going to lose. So you know, in hockey, it's the same thing. Like they say 2-0 is the worst lead in hockey because the other team has no choice but to throw everything they have at you. And they're either going to come back or they're going to make a mistake and you're going to blow them out. Tends to go one way or the other. So anyway, I was very excited by that first goal. Canada's first in the men's soccer tournament World Cup ever. It was fun to see.
Missed it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was super disappointed. We had plans. We were going to go to a restaurant and go sit and watch the game. And we got there 11 minutes after it started. And I just get a notification on my phone. They scored their first goal. And I was like, well, we can turn the car around. Let's go home. Well, don't even worry about it.
I sat down like three, just like they were just celebrating it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my.
Yeah.
My wife made me do some house stuff, so I tried to rush it, and then I missed the start.
Yeah. But I watched my first.
You gave up at the first goal against?
Me? No, I watched the whole way through, but I said that we should have gone home, because I said I wanted to watch the first. Yeah, I wanted to watch the first men's soccer goal. I wanted to watch it, but then, you know, it didn't happen. It was basically as I was driving there, I was upset, so. But I watched all the way through. I learned a lot about soccer. I think that's the first game I've watched in its entirety. So
now I won't probably watch. Well, I'll watch the next Canada game to see if they can get a win, score another goal at least. Then I'll probably be done with the World Cup until the final.
Yeah. So Canada plays again? Is that true?
Morocco.
Yeah.
Oh, Morocco plays again?
Canada plays Morocco.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought they got eliminated. I thought that's out and they're down.
No.
They're eliminated, but they still have a game.
Oh, okay, cool. There you go. You know what? I'll watch that. I didn't know. I thought that just was it. Yeah,
they can't go through to the next round.
Mm.
But you got to finish. You got to finish the job.
Fair enough, yeah.
And it's still a lot of pride to play for. I mean, if we can come back with pride after scoring a goal, imagine how much more pride you'd have after coming back with a win at the World Cup.
A W. Love it.
5:16 now. Is Annette joining us this morning, or how's that shape?
Annette's off today. I'm just trying to see if Steph is ready to go.
We're having Stefan Keys this morning.
We will.
Let me know when he arrives.
He is here.
Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Stefan.
How are you, my brother?
Well, we're just being kind of collectively bummed out about Canada. And
I know. I hear you. That Croatia game. Well, you know, Davies still made history. We got one in the net better than we did in 86, but short-lived, eh?
It's a long time to wait for a goal.
Right. It's a long time to wait for a goal.
Not so long in soccer.
Right.
But yeah, that's the thing too about soccer. Once you're down 2 or 3-1, you just know.
Yeah,
time's probably not going to happen.
Time's running out, and it's not looking good.
Yeah. Anyway, but I'm tired of being bummed out about that for the moment. What else is going on in the news?
You know, the Emergencies Act inquiry is still on our lips this morning as news anchors and journalists. The public session starts to begin. So testimony is done, and we're moving into that phase of things, so to speak. So we're talking about that a little bit.
Can't say I even know what that phase is going to look like.
The public policy phase, yeah. It's not quite clear just yet what it's going to look like, but...
don't think it's going to be must-watch TV, though.
No, definitely not. We'll see if that part even makes it on TV.
I don't think I'll be carrying my phone around like I was at times during other parts of the inquiry, like when the former police chief was testifying or when the prime minister was testifying.
Right. The decision makers are on the hot seat. Then now it's consulting with about 50 experts, and they're going to share their perspectives on the use of the act and whether it should have been updated and that type of stuff.
Yeah. And then we can all take a break for Christmas and wait, holding our breaths until we get the final decision.
Mm-hmm. Likely in February.
Yeah. I thought the prime minister didn't make any major gaffes while he was testifying. No. I was sort of waiting for one, but not really. Not sure he convinced me that they had really no choice. You know, it seemed to boil down to not because things were out of hand, but just in case they could get out of hand, they needed to take action. I think that'll persuade a few people. But
yeah.
But I just don't know yet. I don't know. After all this, it still seems like a borderline call that they used the Emergencies Act, and it maybe came a little too late, but certainly was useful to police once they had it.
It like, definitely you know, seemed
police
to.
Police tools are going to use them.
Yeah, it definitely seemed to accelerate the process of getting access back to the streets and ending the occupation. I think still people are stunned about what they may see as an overreach into people's bank accounts and freezing, you know, hundreds of accounts and people not being able to really feed their families or pay their mortgages.
Yeah, who knew Canadians might be touchy about the idea the government can go into your bank and stop you from getting your money.
Yeah. You mean it's not safe there? It's not out of their reach?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, even the banks can't like that, ultimately. You know, they got to follow the court order, but
right,
they can't have liked it because it leaves pretty bad taste in your mouth. But, all right, so that's Friday's news. Come on, I'm looking for something more. And, you know, I'm pushing you, Stefan, because I am not finding a lot of news to be excited about this morning.
Oh, to be excited about.
Yeah, it's not that I'm going, ooh, that's a big story. Oh, you know what is kind of interesting, though? That in a country like China, where you have a democracy and total control of the media, and they've been, you know, they have an iron fist on every issue, that there are so many protests against COVID restrictions, the zero tolerance, lock everybody down all the time policy they have. Mm-hmm. Workers are not liking it. And there's a lot of pushback. That's surprising to me. People have to be really mad. I think it's probably a little bit of what governments think about here when they try to decide about mask mandates or ever instituting lockdowns again. Is as uncomfortable as we get with how crowded our hospitals are, especially pediatric hospitals, to even think about those measures. If people in China will do what they're doing, facing the consequences they face, people are, after a couple of years, they're ready to fight back against being told what to do, even if it is a public health crisis. I think that's pretty telling.
Yeah, everyone has their limits. And at this point, those living in China are saying enough is enough. And they definitely have some of the strictest policies and high-level technology. I still remember the drone footage of people telling people, swooping in, telling people to go back inside or sanitize their hands. That's like, wow, this is very futuristic.
Yeah, security forces waiting outside of apartment buildings to put you back in.
There's no joke. So the fact that they have now taken to the streets knowing that they could face very serious consequences without a lot of coverage of those consequences.
You could just disappear.
You could literally just disappear.
Yeah.
Not be seen for a while.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of a big story and interesting and has kind of indirect impacts on the rest of the world, right, about how governments respond in these situations. Not that we ever faced anything like they're facing.
That's right.
But I also, you know, you see what's happening with the flu and RSV, and you think, what's going to happen when they loosen up those policies in China, all the other viruses that don't go away, you know, they get minimized, and we had flu last year, but not like this year. And look how it roars back because we've been staying away from each other. Now, all of a sudden, I mean, my kids are going to be, I think, unless they wake up a lot better than they went to bed last night, they're going to be off school again.
Right.
Again, I've lost count of how many times they've had respiratory ailments in the last month. I mean, my son had full-blown COVID just over a month ago, I guess. He tested positive. And then he's had respiratory viruses enough to be off for a day. This is probably the third time in the last month. My daughter will be the second or third time as well. And I've been sick for half a day here and there, sore throat, but not enough to really knock me down. Everybody's sick all the time, it seems like now.
Yeah, the trickle-down effect is, you know, obviously we talk a lot about overwhelming the hospitals and our healthcare system, but families altogether just aren't sleeping. My cousin has some young kids. They've been sick on and off for a while. It means he and his wife are up all night. They can't go to work when they get sick. That, again, slows down productivity in the economy, and so it feels like we're in a bit of trouble again.
Yeah, and there's not a lot we can do about it, seems, because people just not going to listen. What's your observation on masks? I know Annette feels like it's 50-50 when you're in stores and out. I'm still not seeing that many masks around here.
I think the split is based on demographic. I think a lot of seniors are very cautious and they wear their masks, and I see
understandably.
It. Yeah, I see it a lot at the malls and the grocery stores, and then the younger demo. It's interesting because there's this young adult or young professional demographic that seems to feel comfortable. And then there are those who still look school-aged or preteen or teenagers that may have a little bit of anxiety around it. Or perhaps, you know, there's still a multi-generational family and have a senior at home that they're trying to protect. But I see a lot of them wearing the masks as well.
How about you, Rosie? Rosie's just come in.
Hey, everyone.
I feel like you see, how would you describe the number of people masking?
I wouldn't describe it as 50-50 at all. I would describe it as maybe 10% when I go into crowded areas, into the malls, people are bustling, and then you see a mask here, you see a mask there. You definitely see masks, but
for
you
sure,
don't. Yeah, you don't see the majority of people wearing masks.
Yeah, and I'm not sure you will, unless it's actually mandated.
Right. But I remember you telling me a story of a woman who actually saw you at an event and had to tell you how much you mean to her, especially in the morning. She lives alone and she was going through chemo and she had a mask on. There are folks who
wear...
Yeah,
it was Remembrance Day.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that's an interesting choice because you're outside.
Right.
And it was Remembrance Day, so there was a lot of people, but you weren't shoulder to shoulder. Yeah, and it made me realize, you know, you can't judge because this is a woman who's severely immune compromised. And she feels like even short contact with someone outside could make her sick. But she wanted to go out and pay respects to people who served their country. And so she made a choice to wear a mask.
There you go.
Good for her. She was out and at least she didn't feel quite so alone. And she was clearly feeling pretty alone and she followed me through the crowd at the end of it all. When a companion on the radio is so important to you, you feel you need to say that, you've been feeling pretty lonely.
Yeah, it's true.
And it probably meant a lot to her to get out and share that moment of Remembrance Day with everyone. But she wore a mask, so, you know, who to judge, right? You don't know what anybody's individual
is. You don't know, no doubt that mask gave her a sense of protection.
Yeah. But I've been telling my kids when they got a little bit of the sniffles now, if you're going to go out, wear the mask.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm the dad. I get to say that. Like, don't. Let's not risk making other people sick. I'm tempted to have a mask mandate in the house because I'm tired of them making me sick.
It just keeps going around and around.
I think people were shocked when OPH suggested that too, right? If you are at home, still feel free to put your mask on if you're not feeling well, just to protect others in the household.
I'll tell you, though, when Killian had COVID, And I'd go in to take his temperature or give him medication or whatever. I wore a mask in his room. Why wouldn't you? A doctor would under similar circumstances, right? Or a nurse or going in to check up on a sick patient, you'd put the mask on.
Right.
So I did. I didn't get COVID again that time.
Good.
But, oh yeah, I'm a little bit careful around them. Oh, Daddy, I need a hug. Sad to say, you're not getting one from me.
Yeah. Not today. Slam.
Back up.
Yeah, their immune system much stronger than yours.
Yeah, and it's not because I'm worried about dying or something like that. It's just like, really, do I want to spend 3 or 4 days in bed?
Right.
If it's avoidable by just keeping some distance? No, I'm not. I don't want to do that.
Yeah, I'm really into the elbow bump. Now, when guests come in, I stick out my elbow. I'm like, hey, how you doing? Because everybody still sticks out their hand. I'm like, nope, here's my elbow. There you go.
There was a time a couple of years ago. Stefan, if you want to sneak out, by the way, go ahead and do that.
All right. Thanks, guys. I'll see you later.
I know you're ready for the show. But I thought 2 years ago, handshaking was probably dead forever.
Yeah.
It has come roaring back.
It really has. All kinds of hands coming at me. And I'm like, no, doing the Matrix move for you. Hey, elbow. Because
I was a little like that during flu season anyway.
Right.
Always.
Right. It's, yeah. Smart practice. Just don't know.
Yeah, and, you know, sneezing into the crook of your elbow instead of just sneezing into your hands and then shaking somebody's hand. Oh,
please,
don't do
that. No.
Don't ever forget about COVID. Just don't ever do that.
Yeah,
that's
just
really
just
gross.
Don't do that. Yeah. Yeah.
Put that handkerchief in your pocket. I'm not going to use it to wipe tears from my eyes when you've been blowing your nose in it.
Okay, I'll take mine out of my front cardigan here. Remember how Grandma would put it in her chest there?
Always.
And whip it out. Yeah. That's so sweet.
Right there, just at a moment's notice. Just
yep.
Waiting for tears.
There you go.
You want to give us a quick overview of how the week looks?
Yeah.
Any big systems setting in?
No, just cloudy today, temperature falling into the afternoon, and then a good chance we're going to get some rain on Wednesday. It's going to be mild on Wednesday, 9, plus 9, your high, and then some rain. And that's
Wednesday.
It.
Wednesday? What? Hold on now. What's the date on
the
Wednesday?
The 30th. November 30th
wow.
on Wednesday.
So not quite a December 9 degree.
Not day. Quite. Almost. Yeah.
That's
got
to be up near record territory now.
It's close, but doesn't look like we'll be just hitting that record territory. I mean, yesterday, the day before, so mild. I checked. I was like, did we hit a record? No. We were at 10 degrees on Saturday. Can you imagine? 10.8 degrees. That was our high for Saturday. I was out on my terrazzo and just, you know, sort of arranging the patio furniture, just like a shirt. And I was like,
are you speaking Italian to the furniture too when you're out
yeah,
on your
yeah,
terrazzo?
Yeah. My girlfriend says, like, I said, what should I call this? It's not a balcony. It's much bigger and grander than that. And she loves Italy. She goes, you call it a terrazzo. And I said,
I like
I
that.
Like
can I come
it.
Over for some pizza?
Yeah.
On your terrazzo?
Si.
I si. Promise I'll just bump elbows with you.
There you done.
Won't get too close. That's the story of my life. If I promise a woman not to get close, I've always been more welcome.
Come on over, Bill.
Stay away from me.
Just
we'll
not too
fine.
Close.
5:31, the Morning Rush morning meeting. We're live at 5.
It's the Morning Rush, live at 5.
5:51 plus 2, Monday morning. Just watching November wind down, and I'm going to admit I'm a little bummed out after Canada losing at the World Cup of Soccer, but they got the first men's goal ever in World Cup soccer, so that was something.
That was definitely trending, for sure.
That was fun.
Yeah.
But I thought, you know, they got the first goal, they're up 1-0.
Right off the bat?
There was a goal called back against them. I thought, well, maybe luck's going their way, maybe this is good, but no. Sadly, that didn't happen, so all right. Let's not talk about it for this. We'll get back to it later, but it's bumming me out. What's trending besides that first goal?
Well, before I get into trending, if it's okay with you, Bill, I just wanted to quickly start off by saying happy birthday to my dad. He is actually the reason I started listening to the show. He makes a point of listening every morning. So, you know, if you're listening, Dad, happy birthday.
Is he up this early?
He listens every day from the start of the show to the end of the show, and he's done that even before I started working here. So
wow. Are you going to give him a name or just going
to
call him
Brent? Yeah, Brent is, he's dad to me, so I don't really know his first name, but Brent, it's his birthday today, so I just wanted to give him a cute little shout out because he's my bestie. He's cool.
Happy birthday, Brent.
There we go. All right, so for trending, after the Emergency Act inquiry where the Prime Minister testified on Friday, there was an episode that aired on Canada's Drag Race, and they had a special guest. Here's clip one.
Seeing as we have the best queens from around the world, we thought you deserved a proper welcome. Please help me welcome to the Canada's Drag Race workroom, the Prime Minister of Canada, Justin Trudeau! No.
Yeah.
I actually knew this was trending.
Nice. Good.
I've seen the whole clip.
Yeah. So,
because all of my gay friends sent it to me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all of them.
He's the first, he's the first prime minister or, leader of any country or anything like that to go on any of the Drag Race franchises. So it's a big deal. I think he did a pretty good job for, he's got a little bit of leeway in there. He made some of the contestants
feel happy.
Seemed
a little awkward.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know, on that show, the straight guy in the suit, you'd feel like the only person on a nude beach wearing pants.
Exactly, right? And they're
happy
a little
to have the pants, but feeling strangely, weirdly uncomfortable that you're standing out.
Yeah, the sore thumb. Yeah, it's just for sure. Well,
because they're all, big characters, bigger than life, lots of fun and laughs, and he's sort of standing there while I'm still the prime minister, so I have to play it a bit straight. No pun intended there.
Yeah. And trying to be,
I thought it was good.
Yeah, I thought he was
cute.
But
more important
than
that, one of my friends sent to me a note. He sent one of the many copies of the video I got, and he said, if a prime minister had done this when I was in high school, being tortured by the other guys, it would have changed my life.
Yeah.
Changed my life, he said, just to feel that he was being recognized, that he wasn't alone. So that meant a lot to him, and he means a lot to me, so this means a lot to me.
Yeah, no, for sure. I like that you brought that perspective into it, because, I'm thinking of it as, it's his first person on the franchise. He's the first prime minister to ever walk in the Pride Parade, so I'm like, okay, he's trying to show his support. But when you think about it from the opposite perspective, he really is giving, children and people growing up and people who are full blown adults just trying to figure out their everyday lives, someone to look up to and say, he's open, he's ready to go, he's ready to go on these TV shows and talk about it. So you're right, that's kind of nice.
And he knew that too.
Yeah.
He was making a political statement, not just appearing on a show. And it upstaged his appearance at the Emergencies Act because, frankly, it was a lot more fun.
Yeah. You think the Emergency Act was a lot more fun than his?
No.
Oh,
no.
Okay. His appearance on here. Yeah.
No, I thought that he was, like I expected, he would be pretty well rehearsed.
Yeah. Yeah.
On the Emergencies Act inquiry. And to me, there wasn't a big aha moment where I thought, you had no right. Or, that's why. I didn't have either moment. I didn't have a moment where I thought, now I understand why you did what you did.
Yeah.
Didn't have that either. Still, after all these weeks and weeks of testimony, still scratching my head saying, did we really need it? I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. How did we get here, right? Yeah.
Yeah. But my friend thought we absolutely needed the prime minister on the drag queen show.
Yeah. Canada's Drag Race versus the world. So it's Canada's Drag Race is on Crave, just in case anybody wants to stream it there. But It has a normal regular season where it's a bunch of Canadian drag queens that compete against each other. This one's a little bit different because it's the best of the Canada Drag Race that we've seen in the past, adding in contestants from different places in the world. There's some UK queens.
How do they compete? Was it talent contest?
It's a couple different categories. So it's like outfits, makeup, performance, talent. It's kind of like a beauty competition or a Miss Canada kind of competition with a little bit more funnier, grittier, a little bit, more risque content. I've watched so much of RuPaul's Drag Race. I haven't seen a lot of Canada's Drag Race just because I have been missing that boat a bit. But yeah, this one's kind of cool, though, because it's all the best queens around the world competing against Canada contestants.
Not my kind of show, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
There are, I have not heard any British accents.
Yep.
There are no crimes to solve, and it's not on BritBox.
There you go. Well, maybe, you know, BritBox, maybe you need to start carrying it as well as Crave. There you go. So Bill will watch.
If somebody, you know, was a victim at one of the shows and we had to solve the crime, I might be all in.
Ooh.
I'm not a reality TV guy.
No, you're. That's true. You're not, yeah. But
I'll watch a little bit in the early days of American Idol and then Canadian Idol and stuff. I like the first music shows because growing up in the UK, music shows have always been big there.
Oh, for sure.
And they weren't huge in North America. So I liked those at first, but then
trail off.
I mean, how many of those people who compete actually go on to be major stars? I mean, there have been so many seasons of it. Yeah, there are a handful now.
Yeah.
But still, like, can you name Canadian Idol winner after all those seasons?
No, you're right. But I think this one's kind of, they become the drag race spokesperson for a year. So you see them popping up at leading a lot of the pride parades or a lot of those events. So they do get a lot of traction throughout that year. And then after that, they kind of trickle off, which is similar to Canadian Idol star, like winners and everything like that.
Yeah. And then CTV did that music contest that I never really understood.
Which one?
I don't remember what it was called. It was an Ottawa woman, I think, and her brother won it. You remember, PJ?
Yes. We play their song, I believe, if we're on the same page.
It was a decent song, actually.
Elijah Wood, is that the person?
Oh, yeah. And.
But I never really understood the format of the show. Left me scratching my head the whole time.
Yeah.
And no one was wearing a mask, and I didn't get to turn my back on anyone, you know.
The launch?
That sounds right.
Well, yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right, PJ.
I don't think they were brothers and sisters, but they seem like a duo. But we do play
one
of those.
They were a duo for sure, but I thought they were related, but maybe not.
Two seasons ended in 2019.
Speaking of launch, we're going to launch the show. Coming up next with the 6 o'clock news, the Morning Rush morning meeting is done. We're live at 5.
Ottawa at Work continues with Patricia Bowl.
Well, we're going through this day. It's flying by. Bill Carroll in for Patricia Bowl, and I know you've arrived at work. What's going on?
I'm sorry.
PJ?
The buttons are very close to each other, and usually because Patricia loves Taylor Swift, so I think my mind just, that was Taylor
drifted,
Swift.
Drifted away from me. Thanks.
So
we appreciate that. Am I so quickly forgotten? No, this is the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll, and it is Monday, the 28th day of November. We'll get to Patricia soon enough, PJ. Like, wow, you're pushing me out the door, man.
I'm so sorry. I feel terrible. I usually do it to her. I usually play the Bill one for her, so. Oh.
So a little revenge for Patricia.
The turntables, yes.
Did she put you up to that so I'd give this long
no,
promo for her show?
I'm sorry. I'm sweating. I feel so bad. I messed up.
Yeah, I barely notice, so I'm really, it's ridiculous. I mean, I'm not the guy in the newscast we just heard who was in a pub watching the World Cup soccer game who said he'd been waiting his whole life for this, for Canada to score a goal. Not for Canada to win the World Cup even, but for Canada to win, to score a goal at the men's tournament. His whole life he almost blacked out, and I thought, okay, well, that's a fairly low bar. I'm just not quite as excited about the first World Cup goal as a lot of other people are. I mean, it was cool. I was excited at the moment. Like, yes, okay, there's the first. Now we're going to need a win. Going to need a W. I wanted more from Canada. I'm greedy that way. It's not too late to get their first win because they can't go to the next round, but they still got a game to play against a very good team from Morocco. Not going to be easy, but... Anyway, so we're all a little bummed out about that, but not. I'd like to have heard that guy later who was so excited about the first goal. He must have been just beyond despondent when it was, or maybe that was enough. He's like, no, I've been waiting my whole life for this one goal. He's been waiting. I think that might be a little hyperbolic. Just, I doubt he's been waiting his whole life for that one goal, but. There you go. If he has been, aim higher. Listen, I was mentioning during our morning show meeting, if you're just joining us, Got another couple of kids this morning who didn't seem well yesterday. Now, they recover really fast, but it's every week, one or sometimes both of my kids in the last 6 weeks have been a little bit sick, including one case of COVID, which was for most of the week off school. It's just incredible how much sickness is going around right now. And it's very frustrating. You got to avoid your kids. You know, you're trying not to get too close. I don't want to be off sick. And anyway, so I don't know when they wake up this morning. I don't know what kind of shape they're going to be in. But if they have symptoms, they're not going to go. I don't think they have COVID. I mean, my son just had COVID 6 weeks ago. I know it's not impossible he could have it again, but that seems pretty unlikely. But, you know, I talked to Barry Dworkin on the weekend. And I guess it was Friday we met for lunch. And he was telling me that you can get RSV back to back. Like you can just get over a case and then very quickly you can get it again. But I'm not testing them. You know, it's just they're going to be okay. Medicate them. We managed to get some medication. Plus they're teenagers. So not the same as having a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old. But we do have enough medication around the house. The federal health minister, by the way, says that previously announced import of children's pain relievers is already hitting some pharmacy shelves, more expected in the next few weeks. This is Jean-Yves Duclos, who says domestic production is on the way up as well.
A record number of children's analgesics are currently being manufactured across the country, with some companies producing twice as many units as they did at the same time in 2021.
We had a listener tell us on Friday, though, he went to his pharmacy and the pharmacist said, yeah, we do have some coming. It's 2 bottles. 2. So I wouldn't get overly excited about the problem, the shortage coming to an end anytime soon, but it's something I guess is better than nothing, but in this case, not a whole lot better. Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, has welcomed several European leaders to an international summit on food security in the capital. They got together to talk about food security and agricultural exports. In that case, it's food coming from Ukraine, getting out to the rest of the world. The Polish prime minister says the nations are ready to provide support and resources this winter.
Kyiv needs to know that it has reliable allies in the European Union and the United States and the entire free world, who will not let it fall into Moscow's hands again.
Yeah, he went on to say that he thinks Russia's choosing destruction in the face of defeat, that they're being petty and angry, and if we can't win this war, we're leaving nothing behind that's usable. And they don't seem to care about the world's food supply and the impact it has on... This has been a terrible situation. You know, the awful thing about it is if Ukraine had fallen the way people thought it was going to fall, the people of Ukraine, probably fewer would have died, but they'd be living under an oppressed regime they didn't want to live under. The rest of the world would have gone on and just continued our lives without the kind of disruption we're seeing internationally. But they had the guts to fight back. They refused to give in. And you have to admire their spirit and how well they've conducted themselves on the battlefield. And I got to tell you, as you know, every time I go to a grocery store, I wonder now, am I paying a higher price for this because of what's going on in Ukraine? Then I think about how brave the people there are. And I think, well, if that's the only price I have to pay for them standing up for themselves and facing death and destruction, I'm not going to complain, because what's gone on with Ukraine is absolutely remarkable. And I think it's a lesson to countries like Russia and China, who have more aggressive positions, that not so easy to just march into a country, even with superior military might. Our federal government is standing up against China now. I wonder if it's because the prime minister was kind of personally embarrassed, that recent meeting, you know, dressed down by the president of China. But anyway, I hope that's not what dictating policy. But the federal government's new Indo-Pacific strategy has been introduced. It includes $2.3 billion in spending for Canada to form closer ties with countries all the way from Pakistan to Japan. And the Foreign Affairs Minister, Melanie Joly, stressed the importance of the region. This was a news conference in Vancouver over the weekend.
Every issue that matters to Canadians, our national security, our economic prosperity, democratic values, climate change, or again, human rights will be shaped by the relationship Canada has with Indo-Pacific countries.
And then there's the Canada defeat at the World Cup, which I have a couple of clips from the coach. A lot of people blaming him for this, by the way, because he handed motivation to the other side. I'm not one to buy into that theory, honestly, but let me save that for a couple of minutes from now. Let you hear what he had to say after Canada's defeat. He wasn't bragging about getting the only goal very much. It didn't mean much to him. He wanted the win, like I wanted the win. Like I'm sure members of the team wanted the win. And I think there's a lot of pride on the line. When's the next game, by the way? Is it? I think it's Thursday, isn't it?
I think it's Tuesday, but I will
double Tuesday?
Check. No, I think you're... I'll find out.
I had it on my calendar, and I was so excited about it, and I thought, you know, I'll plan my entire week around it. But now I'm less excited to watch it, but maybe they'll give us a great game and come back with their first goal and their first win. Katie, I think, has it. You look like you have it.
Yeah, December 1st at 10 a.m.
So Tuesday morning.
Yep.
No, Thursday,
Thursday
morning.
Morning. Thursday morning.
Oh, it is Thursday. Yeah. BJ, why do you doubt me?
Sorry. I don't mean to.
You know, just I'm right 99% of the time. But here's the thing. When I'm wrong, I'm really wrong. So
I was wrong. You were right.
There you go.
I'm exactly. Stupid. You're smart.
Let's not go that far. Not that smart. 6:50 in the morning rush.
This is the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA. Share your opinion now. Text us at 580-580. Please include your name and where you're texting from. Standard text rates may apply.
6:23 Monday morning, and I have our $1,000 winner on the line. The Grand in Your Hand contest brought to you by Bingoland Gaming Center with Vegas style gaming. Bingoland Gaming Center, more than just bingo. E-I-B-I-N. I haven't played bingo since I was a kid. Get a little card and then you have to spell out the word bingo. Is that how it works? Katie says yes.
Oh,
you
yeah.
Look like you've been to bingo at the Legion.
You have a number, so it's like B1, B2, G63 or whatever, and then you have
to... it says bingo on the top of the card.
You get that little rolly ball thing comes down.
You have to get a line, or you can get just all B's or a diagonal.
Oh, Natalie, have you ever played bingo?
I have.
Yeah? You ever win at bingo?
Not very much, no.
No? Well, you won at the Grand in Your Hand, brought to you by Bingoland Gaming Center.
That is awesome. That's
you just
awesome.
Won $1,000.
That's great.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Is it Houle? Is that how I say your last name?
It is. It is. Yes.
Natalie Houle, $1,000 richer just by listening to the radio. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Oh, there you go. All right. We'll put her on hold and tell her how we're going to send her that money. So that probably cheers her up a little bit after the Canadian loss at the World Cup. Man, oh man, 4-1 was the final. It doesn't look pretty on paper, does it? But this is what happens, right? You get down a couple of goals. You got to open things up. You got to take more risks. And then it can get a bit out of hand. But we'll always have the Fonzie's first goal. Alphonso Davies made history, scoring Canada's first ever goal at the Men's World Cup Soccer Tournament. Coach John Herdman says Davies' goal just 67 seconds into the match was a very special moment.
Yeah, I think it was a great start and a proud moment. I think for the fans in the stadium, for people back home, you know, we got to celebrate something that was we've been waiting a long time for.
Yeah, I know. I got greedy. I wanted more. But he says the second goal against, which made it 2-1, just as they were about to go into halftime, he said that one maybe was the game changer.
I think the second goal turned the tide, you know, that close to half time. You've got to make tactical adjustments coming into the second half, which leaves you open. And when you open yourself up to a team like Croatia, they're going to be clinical in transition. And I thought they gave a masterclass in those transitional moments.
A lot of people pointing the finger at him for the loss. He hadn't opened his mouth and said, we're going to F Croatia, which became a rallying cry for the not just the people of Croatia, but the team itself. I don't know. I probably read 50 different people quoted as saying, you know, when I was playing, fill in your sport here, the coach always went out of his way not to give the other team some slogan to hang in their locker room, right? You've heard that quoted over the weekend, I'm sure. Lots of people said it. Maybe that's generally true. That's how they behave. But you really think that it's the World Cup and Croatia needs to be mad at Canada to win? I don't think so. I think they saw how well Canada played against Belgium and thought, we better not take it lightly. But it's the World Cup. I think there's plenty of motivation there. I don't think you need John Herdman's going F Croatia. But I think he felt bad about it later anyway. He says he doesn't have any regrets necessarily, but maybe could have done things a little differently.
No, not at all. I think there's a respect there for Croatia. And as I keep saying, you know, we're here to push as far as we can as a team. We're here to change the mentality of the group. You know, I could have been a little bit more composed coming out of the huddle, but I mean, that's my learning. I'll take that on the chin.
Ooh, the reaction online that I read, though, was pretty furious. People saying, just go back to England. That guy shouldn't coach another game ever. That's okay. Dial it back. Dial it back. In the end, Croatia is a really good team. And they played very well. And it's Canada's first trip to the World Cup in a lot of people's lifetime. Did you really expect they were going to win the World Cup? I didn't really think necessarily they'd even go through to the next round. But I thought they might win a game. And you know what? They still can. It's not over. Don't listen to PJ during our meeting this morning. He's very negative about this. Morocco's really good. They just beat Belgium. It's going to be terrible. It's going to be all, I don't know. Maybe Morocco should say something like, you know, we're going to go and F Canada. And we can hang that in the locker room. I just don't believe those things are major game changers. I don't. But I also wouldn't give them any motivation. Because the only thing I'm superstitious about is sports. Right? I feel like if I wore a certain thing and my team won and I need them to win again, I'm going to wear that again next time I watch them. I know that's ridiculous, but those things are nonsense except in sports. Then all superstitions are valid. So maybe, you know, it would have been better if he kept his mouth shut. I'm not going to fire the guy over that. Come on. 6:29, the Morning Rush.
News Talk 580 CFRA. Morning till the
morning. Now you're in my life. This is the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA. Be a part of the conversation. Text us at 580-580. Please include your name and where you're texting from. Standard text rates may apply.
Biggest problem we used to have in our house with children's medication was expiry dates. Right? You open it up, kids are sick. Oh, look at this thing. It's been expired for 2 years. All right, I'll go get some more. Because, yeah, they get sick once or twice a season. Usually, you'd use medication for a day, and then you wouldn't use it again for a long time. Maybe when they were a little bit younger, I'd use it a bit more. But in the past 10 years, just haven't gone through that much of it. But they are sick all the time right now. My high school age kids, it is one after another after another. I have no idea whether it's the flu or RSV or COVID, or the symptoms are all very similar. You're using the same medications to treat the symptoms in every case. And they don't stay sick very long, but they're collectively now starting to miss a lot of school days. We do have enough children's medication, though, and they're young adults, too. So my son, especially now, he's 6 feet tall. So my daughter is a little smaller and still has trouble with pills. And so you're looking for liquid to give them. I remember my son when he had his broken, I think it was a broken wrist, and he wanted some Tylenol liquid. And the doctor in the ER said, you're a little big now. You'd have to drink so much of that for it to have an effect. You're going to feel sick. Like you. So we forced him to learn to swallow a pill. But it's tricky stuff, and we're being told by the federal government that help is on its way. We're also hearing from some that it's not enough and it's not very fast. Jen Belcher, Vice President of Ontario Pharmacists Association, is on the line. Good morning, Jen.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So in a practical, real-life way, are we seeing more children's medication on shelves in most cities around the country yet?
We are at this point. The interim supply that was coming from overseas arrived last week, started to be distributed, and as of Friday or today, we should be seeing that supply on most pharmacy shelves.
Great. And what kind of quantities are we talking about?
The initial importation was 1 million bottles, and we know that we have another 500,000 that have been ordered and should be arriving in the coming weeks, but that initial million bottle supply will replenish some of the domestic supplies that's been being manufactured and coming back into the distribution channel throughout the last month.
So in an average winter, and this is not that, I understand, but how many bottles would pharmacies go through over a period of a couple of weeks or a month? Because a million, that's a lot, but there are a lot of pharmacies in the country and a lot of kids, and so, you know, it can go off the shelves pretty quickly.
Yeah, Tylenol and Advil are a bit unique. They can be sold in more places than just pharmacies, but we do have 11,000 pharmacies across Canada. I don't have average numbers because it may look very different in a larger pharmacy like a Costco or a Shoppers Drug Mart compared to a small independent, but I do know that we're looking at approximately 3 to 4 times the normal utilization or all-time high utilization this year as compared to previous years.
That's huge, isn't it? 3 to 4 times?
It's really big. There was very big challenges in forecasting how much would actually be need to made because this type of demand has never been seen before.
How have other countries managed it better than we have, or have they?
Well, we have heard anecdotally that the demand in other countries just hasn't been as high as it's been here. They haven't seen quite as much of a surge, and they may have had more surge capacity in their manufacturing system that we just haven't had here. So, you know, the ability to ramp up more quickly, get more ingredients more quickly, produce more bottles of these products at the factories that they had.
We heard from a listener who said they were in a pharmacy, and listen, one story doesn't necessarily represent what's actually going on, but they were told by their pharmacist, yeah, we've got a delivery coming next week, but it was literally 2 bottles.
It's been really hard, yeah, because we don't necessarily always know what's coming at the pharmacy level. We know what we try to order, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's what's coming in. And pharmacies have been managing with drug shortages, allocating approximately about 20 to 25% of their daily time just managing prescription and over-the-counter drug shortages lately. So it's been really tough.
But you feel like as of today, if you had a couple of children with fever, you could probably find something?
Likely, yes. I would say that, you know, if you have your regular pharmacy, maybe, check in there first. But ultimately, this distribution of the interim supply should be in the pipeline in most locations at this point in time. So some hope for parents on that front.
There's going to be a real temptation after having gone through a shortage, even if your kids are not sick right now, to go in and stock up your own pharmacy at home. That's a natural inclination. I understand it totally. I would imagine you are asking us maybe to resist that urge.
Absolutely. We just say that the equity of everyone being able to access the supply they need in the moment is really important. And pharmacies may be limiting the number of units a family can buy behind the counter. So if you don't see it on the shelf, it might be worth asking at the pharmacy counter to see if they've been keeping it there, just to ensure that people can't come in and clear out the shelves with one purchase.
Great. Thank you. I'm glad to hear the crisis is starting to ease. That's good news. And let's hope the supply keeps up with demand, because more supply comes in and there is less demand. I mean, I know hope is not a plan, but that's what I'm hoping for. And I'm sure you are as well.
Very much so.
Thank you, Jen.
Thank you.
Jen Belcher with some better news from the Ontario Pharmacists Association. She's vice president of that association. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll. Interesting story I'm going to be watching today at 10 o'clock. PJ, it's a real-life police procedural show.
Ooh.
Toronto police at 10 o'clock this morning are to announce the name of a suspect in a 1983 double murder. It's a cold case that they've been working on for years. I'll read the opening paragraph from this. I don't know where you got this. This is the, I think I sent it to you, actually. Sun Media, maybe?
The Toronto Star.
Toronto police homicide detectives have arrested a suspect in the shocking 1983 murders of career girl Erin Gilmore and single mother Susan Tice. Now, I'm going to talk about the language there in a minute because I think that's a separate but also interesting story. Apparently, they've already made the arrest, and detectives have been working on this for literally generations. I sort of remember those names. One that I remember even more is 1984, the murder of 9-year-old Christine Jessup. That was a big, big story all across Canada at the time. And the stories are the same in that it's new technology that has led to some breakthroughs. In the Jessup investigation, the little girl, detectives used DNA for genetic genealogy that can, at the very least, identify family members of an accused killer. And once the family's been identified, detectives go to work eliminating still a lot of, they've eliminated tens of millions of possible suspects, but narrowed it down to a family. And with this case of Gilmore Tice, these two women, they looked very unrelated. I mean, they're having trouble tying the two together. They weren't family or friends, but they were linked in 2011 by DNA that revealed both were killed by the same man. The killer first struck August 17th, 1983. Tice was a social worker, mother of four, had recently moved from Calgary. She was found dead in her home, which was ransacked on Gray Street near College and Bathurst. So busy, kind of a downtown area in Toronto. She was found in her upstairs bedroom. She'd been raped and stabbed numerous times. It was a terrible murder. And she'd been working with disadvantaged kids, and police believed she'd been dead actually for several days. Then 4 months after that, so December now, 1983, Gilmore, 22, was found murdered in her Yorkville apartment, just four clicks from Tice's downtown home. She, too, sexually assaulted, stabbed to death. After that, they just hit a brick wall. 5,000 suspects. But in 2000, DNA connected the two. But for the detectives, was still a lot of people. They thought the killer had some sort of link to the area. 2011, they said the killer was between 18 and 35 at the time of the crimes, making him mid-50s or early 70s today. Susan Tice and Eric Gilmore both murdered months apart, but now their stories brought together by DNA. Toronto police say it's one of the most complicated cases they've ever worked on. But somehow, and we don't know the details yet, they've managed to link the two and found a suspect who has been arrested and will be introduced at 10 o'clock this morning. So I'm going to be watching that news conference very closely to see exactly how they brought this together and solved the crime. Now, can we just go back to the language for a minute? Amazing how much language changes over time. I think the Toronto Star must have described these two women the way they did, just to sort of remind us. That can be the only explanation. This must have been how they were described in the media before, because no modern newspaper would describe them as career girl Erin Gilmore and single mother Susan Tice. When was the last time you heard anyone described as a career girl? Right? Nothing unusual about that. Most women have careers, and we don't call women girls anymore. These were young women. So I just thought that really stood out to me. But I think that's what they're doing is they're trying to, this is how they were known and how they were became kind of notarized back at the time. So it did trigger a memory for me, that language, career girl and single mother. But I wonder what the families are thinking today as they await the announcement. Presumably they've already been told, but to hear it publicly that the crime, that police believe they have a suspect, going to be really interesting, and I think the trial will be as well. DNA. People think they got away with murder decades ago. Maybe not. Police are still out there, still looking for you. 7:47, The Morning Rush.
This is The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA. Be a part of the conversation. Text us at 580-580. Please include your name and where you're texting from. Standard text rates may apply.
Biggest problem we used to have in our house with children's medication was expiry dates, right? You open it up, kids are sick. Oh, look at this thing. been expired for 2 years. All right, I'll go get some more. Because, yeah, they'd get sick once or twice a season. Usually, you'd use medication for a day, and then you wouldn't use it again for a long time. Maybe when they were a little bit younger, I'd use it a bit more. But in the past 10 years, just haven't gone through that much of it. But they are sick all the time right now. My high school age kids, it is one after another after another. I have no idea whether it's the flu or RSV or COVID, or the symptoms are all very similar. You're using the same medications to treat the symptoms in every case. And they don't stay sick very long, but they're collectively now starting to miss a lot of school days. We do have enough children's medication, though, and they're young adults, too. So my son, especially now, he's 6 feet tall. So my daughter is a little smaller and still has trouble with pills, and so you're looking for liquid to give them. I remember my son when he had his broken, I think it was a broken wrist, and he wanted some Tylenol liquid. And the doctor in the ER said, you're a little big now. You'd have to drink so much of that for it to have an effect. You're going to feel sick. Like you. So we forced him to learn to swallow a pill. But it's tricky stuff. And we're being told by the federal government that help is on its way. We're also hearing from some that it's not enough and it's not very fast. Jen Belcher, Vice President of Ontario Pharmacists Association, is on the line. Good morning, Jen.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So in a practical, real-life way, are we seeing more children's medication on shelves in most cities around the country yet?
We are at this point. The interim supply that was coming from overseas arrived last week, started to be distributed, and as of Friday or today, we should be seeing that supply on most pharmacy shelves.
Great. And what kind of quantities are we talking about?
The initial importation was 1 million bottles. And we know that we have another 500,000 that have been ordered and should be arriving in the coming weeks. But that initial million bottle supply will replenish some of the domestic supply that's been being manufactured and coming back into the distribution channel throughout the last month.
So in an average winter, and this is not that, I understand, but how many bottles would pharmacies go through over a period of a couple of weeks or a month? Would, 'cause a million, that's a lot. But there are a lot of pharmacies in the country and a lot of kids. And so, you know, it can go off the shelves pretty quickly.
Yeah, Tylenol and Advil are a bit unique. They can be sold in more places than just pharmacies. But we do have 11,000 pharmacies across Canada. I don't have average numbers because it may look very different in a larger pharmacy like a Costco or a Shoppers Drug Mart compared to a small independent. But I do know that we're looking at approximately 3 to 4 times the normal utilization or all-time high utilization this year as compared to previous years.
That's huge, isn't it? 3 to 4 times?
It's really big. There was very, you know, very big challenges in forecasting how much would actually be need to made because this type of demand has never been seen before.
How have other countries managed it better than we have, or have they?
Well, we have heard anecdotally that the demand in other countries just hasn't been as high as it's been here. They haven't seen quite as much of a surge, and they may have had more surge capacity in their manufacturing system that we just haven't had here. So, you know, the ability to ramp up more quickly, get more ingredients more quickly, produce more bottles of these products at the factories that they had.
We heard from a listener who said they were in a pharmacy, and listen, one story doesn't necessarily represent what's actually going on, but they were told by their pharmacist, yeah, we've got a delivery coming next week, but it was literally 2 bottles.
It's been really hard, yeah, because we don't necessarily always know what's coming at the pharmacy level. We know what we try to order, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's what's coming in. And pharmacies have been managing with drug shortages, allocating approximately about 20 to 25% of their daily time, just managing prescription and over-the-counter drug shortages lately. So it's been really tough.
But you feel like as of today, if you had a couple of children with fever, you could probably find something?
Likely, yes. I would say that, you know, if you have your regular pharmacy, maybe, you know, check in there first. But ultimately, this distribution of the interim supply should be in the pipeline in most locations at this point in time. So some hope for parents on that front.
There's going to be a real temptation after having gone through a shortage, even if your kids are not sick right now, to go in and stock up your own pharmacy at home. That's a natural inclination. I understand it totally. I would imagine you are asking us maybe to resist that urge.
Absolutely. We just say that the equity of everyone being able to access the supply they need in the moment is really important, and pharmacies may be limiting the number of units a family can buy behind the counter. So if you don't see it on the shelf, it might be worth asking at the pharmacy counter to see if they've been keeping it there, just to ensure that people can't come in and clear out the shelves with one purchase.
Great. Thank you. I'm glad to hear the crisis is starting to ease. That's good news, and let's hope the supply keeps up with demand, because more supply comes in and there is less demand. I mean, that's, I know hope is not a plan, but that's what I'm hoping for, and I'm sure you are as well.
Very much so.
Thank you, Jen.
Thank you.
Jen Belcher with some better news from the Ontario Pharmacists Association. She's vice president of that association. It's The Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll. Interesting story I'm going to be watching today at 10 o'clock. PJ, it's a real life police procedural show.
Ooh.
Toronto police at 10 o'clock this morning are to announce the name of a suspect in a 1983 double murder. It's a cold case that they've been working on for years. I'll read the opening paragraph from this. I don't know where you got this. I think I sent it to you, actually. Sun Media, maybe?
The Toronto Star.
Toronto police homicide detectives have arrested a suspect in the shocking 1983 murders of career girl Erin Gilmore and single mother Susan Tice. Now, I'm going to talk about the language there in a minute, because I think that's a separate but also interesting story. Apparently, they've already made the arrest, and detectives have been working on this for literally generations. I sort of remember those names. One that I remember even more is 1984, the murder of 9-year-old Christine Jessup. That was a big, big story all across Canada at the time. And the stories are the same in that it's new technology that has led to some breakthroughs. In the Jessup investigation, the little girl, detectives used DNA for genetic genealogy that can, at the very least, identify family members of an accused killer. And once the family's been identified, detectives go to work eliminating still a lot of, they've eliminated tens of millions of possible suspects, but narrowed it down to a family. And with this case of Gilmore Tice, these two women, they looked very unrelated. I mean, they're having trouble tying the two together. They weren't family or friends, but they were linked in 2011 by DNA that revealed both were killed by the same man. The killer first struck August 17th, 1983. Tice was a social worker, mother of four, had recently moved from Calgary. She was found dead in her home, which was ransacked on Grace Street near College and Bathurst. It's a busy kind of a downtown area in Toronto. She was found in her upstairs bedroom. She'd been raped and stabbed numerous times. It was a terrible murder. And she'd been working with disadvantaged kids, and police believed she'd been dead actually for several days. Then 4 months after that, so December now, 1983, Gilmore, 22, was found murdered in her Yorkville apartment, just four clicks from Tice's downtown home. She, too, sexually assaulted, stabbed to death. After that, they just hit a brick wall. 5,000 suspects. But in 2000, DNA connected the two. But for the detectives, was still a lot of people. They thought the killer had some sort of link to the area. In 2011, they said the killer was between 18 and 35 at the time of the crimes, making a mid-50s or early 70s today. Susan Tice and Eric Gilmore both murdered months apart, but now their stories brought together by DNA. Toronto police say it's one of the most complicated cases they've ever worked on, but somehow, and we don't know the details yet, they've managed to link the two and found a suspect who has been arrested and will be introduced at 10 o'clock this morning. So I'm going to be watching that news conference very closely to see exactly how they brought this together and solved the crime. Now, can we just go back to the language for a minute? Amazing how much language changes over time. I think the Toronto Star must have described these two women the way they did, just to sort of remind us. That can be the only explanation. This must have been how they were described in the media before, because no modern newspaper would describe them as career girl Erin Gilmore and single mother Susan Tice. When was the last time you heard anyone described as a career girl? Right? Nothing unusual about that. Most women have careers. And we don't call women girls anymore. These were young women. So I just thought that really stood out to me. But I think that's what they're doing is they're trying to, this is how they were known and how they were became kind of notarized back at the time. So it did trigger a memory for me, that language. Career girl and single mother. But I wonder what the families are thinking today as they await the announcement. Presumably they've already been told. But to hear it publicly, that the crime, that police believe they have a suspect, is going to be really interesting. And I think the trial will be as well. DNA. People think they got away with murder decades ago. Maybe not. Police are still out there, still looking for you. 7:47, The Morning Rush.
This is The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA. Be a part of the conversation. Text us at 580-580. Please include your name and where you're texting from. Standard text rates may apply.
I really don't want to underplay the tragedy that the family of an 11-year-old girl who died tobogganing last year at Mooney's Bay are going through. I don't. It has to be terrible. And, you know, they wanted us to look at it as a city and make sure that Mooney's Bay's Hill is safer. They didn't ask for it to be closed down, but looks like that's what city staff has done. They're going to put all kinds of fencing up if they haven't done it already and make it very difficult to toboggan there, which I think seems like an overreaction to me and a really sad outcome for a lot of kids who count on that as a great way to get some fun and exercise and recreation and spend some time together during the winter. Riley Brockington, the local councillor, is a bit concerned about this as well, and he's on the line. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill. Thank you for having me on this morning.
Congratulations on your re-election, by the way, and
thank you.
Welcome back. Be interesting to see how the new council shapes up in the meetings this week.
For sure, yes.
So this is something you want to bring to their attention. What's your concern here?
Well, Bill, as you know, Mooney's Bay Park, quite large, 80-acre park. It's not just a Riverward Park, regional park enjoyed by people across the city all four seasons. People have been tobogganing, snowshoeing, cross-country skiing, all types of winter activities here in the park for decades. I've tobogganed here. Many other families have tobogganed at Mooney's Bay over the years. And very well visited, well received. And so there are issues, inherent issues with tobogganing, not just at this hill, across the city and many other locations. And the overwhelming response by the public, both when the tragic accident happened last December and more recently with the news on Friday, late Friday afternoon, that this is the direction the city's going in, was opposed to plans to cordon off or fence off the hill. There's a strong desire to, even if you keep part of the hill open, look at what those risks are that the city's quite concerned about and address those and keep this hill open. That's my plan indeed.
My kids use a little hill in Manotick, and I look at it, and I've been at the top of it, and didn't see anything inherently dangerous about that one. Well, you know, there's some danger in tobogganing. Kids can bump into each other. You can be standing at the bottom of the hill and a toboggan runs into you and you can get flipped over and it can be icy. You could hit your head. There are all kinds of things that can happen in life. So I understand that. But what's different about Mooney's Bay and this hill? When you toboggan there, did you look around and think this is riskier than some others?
Yeah, I don't think it's actually any of the trees that abut the hill that is a concern, at least not for me. I think because the hill is so tall and the slope is fairly steep on the river facing side, the western side of the hill, you can pick up speed. There's no doubt about that. In fact, when I have tobogganed with my kids, I've basically focused on the northern facing side that faces the Terry Fox Athletic Center, which is shorter in duration, the steepness or the slope is not as pronounced. The city's actually invested some money here. They built a fairly pronounced berm at the bottom so that if you are still traveling at a good pace, before you get to the end where the fencing exists, you go up. You go up this berm. And that's what I think the issue over, you know, my experience over time, Bill, is if you go down that western-facing slope that's quite steep, if the conditions are icy, you can pick up a pretty good amount of speed. And if there's any type of, I don't know, ruts or homemade jumps, there's a little bit of a berm on the left side of that face that, you know, kids who are not as experienced could be injured. So that is certainly one area that the city is concerned about. And,
in the case of a little girl, though, didn't she collided with a post that was there?
That's right. These were recently installed, Bill. The park has had new recycling and garbage stations throughout the park that were put in as part of a pilot project. And when the site was visited in the fall and those bins were removed for the winter, they did not remove these posts. So these were brand new posts that the late José ran into. And not a tree, not a rock, no other features that are, you know, quite a distance from the summit of the hill. So
people are using it for years and no one dies. Absolutely. And then they put in a post and someone dies. I mean, isn't the answer then remove the post?
Of course. And they did that right away.
Right.
Basically the day after the city was in and started wrapping trees. And
are they easily removed? Sorry, Riley, but are they easily removed every season or the posts are gone now?
That station did not come back this year, but the park is huge, Bill, and the recycling and garbage cans are everywhere else. But it was at the base of the hill, probably the worst place to put these posts and not remove them.
For sure.
Exactly.
So you said they've wrapped trees, they use hay bales, right? They've taken other precautions?
Yeah, and you see this other places, the Arboretum, which the federal government looks after, basically does the same things. There's, you know, parts of their hill would have trees like many other hills and they wrap those. So precautions are taken and parents have to know also the ability of their kids. My first hill wasn't Moonies Bay, similar to your kids. You start on smaller hills and as you get older and more confident tobogganing, you graduate to bigger hills. But
you can also, if it's steep and icy, you can also put a helmet on your kids too. There are other options, right?
Sure. And really the goal is to, what the city did at my request immediately after this accident was they hired a professional to assess the risk of the hill as is. That report was delivered. The next step is to have someone say, all right, with these risks identified, how do you make this hill safe or safer? Maybe you don't use all the slopes. Maybe you just focus on that north-facing slope, the shortest one. Seems like the safest side. What does the city need to do to bring that up to a certain level where the city's confident that they can make it a sanctioned site and open to the public? That's where I want to focus on. Some of the other challenges, Bill, are it's not city land. It's all NCC land. The city leases it from the NCC. They're going to be involved in any type of discussion or process. And the hill itself is not natural, part of a landfill site. So any type of digging is going to unravel a number of regulations that we have to look at. So whatever the low-hanging fruit solution is here to make it safer, that's certainly my goal. But the public overwhelmingly, both when the accident happened and more recently with this memo that came out, has said, listen, keep this park open. This is a public park, public space. We acknowledge there are risks associated with tobogganing and other activities, but we want this park and hill left open.
This sounds like a lawyer's solution to me, closing it down like that.
It's the easy way out, Bill.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so you're looking for some kind of compromise here.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Can I ask you a bit unrelated to it, but you said landfill, and I've heard that before, there was landfill. Was that a clean landfill site or an actual garbage dump? What was there?
I don't know exactly.
I'm just trying to imagine anyone who would think today that you'd put any kind of landfill site that close to the river. I mean, just it makes no sense to me.
Well, our knowledge today about what to do is a lot, I think, more clear than in the past. But there are little landfills here and there all over the city, not just some of the bigger ones we know on the periphery. Obviously, when the city was growing, this was the outskirts, but there are obviously other places in the city where that existed. But
a lot of those are vented too, right? Because there's a buildup of gases in a wet landfill site.
Yeah.
I haven't seen or noticed any out there, but
Not that I'm aware of, no. But
yeah.
My point is, if you know, some of the solutions require digging of any sort, then that just...
Yeah, you don't want to mess with that.
For sure.
Oh, totally get it. Thank you, Riley.
Okay, Bill, thank you. Have a good day.
Let us know what happens. Riley Brockington, counselor for Ward 16, encompasses Mooney's Bay, the hill where kids like to toboggan, and we do seem to be overreacting to a terrible situation, for sure, but... You know, you can't keep children 100% safe. They got to live their lives and have some fun, too. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll. We have Dwayne on the line from Blackburn Hamlet. How are you?
Very good.
Excellent. Thank you for calling us this morning. I'm going to play the rules for you. I think I have time here. Let's do that.
10 questions a minute, $10 per correct answer. All 10 gives you $1,000. Have to take your first answer. You can say pass. We'll go back if there's time. You got it?
Got it.
All right, here we go. Question number one. How many episodes of the TV miniseries Collision are there?
Five.
When is the next Canada World Cup game?
Thursday morning.
Which tobogganing hill is set to be off limits once the snow falls?
Mooney's Bay.
What reality TV show did the Prime Minister make an appearance on Friday?
Canada Drag Race.
Who stars in the series Tulsa King?
Stallone.
What was the score of last night's Senators game?
3-2.
When did the Prime Minister testify at the Emergencies Act inquiry?
Friday.
Who stars in the new Netflix series Wednesday?
Wednesday. Oh. Pass.
Who is the Federal Health Minister?
Jean-Yves Duclos.
How many pharmacies are across Canada? Are there across Canada approximately?
Pharmacies? 1,000.
Who stars in the new Netflix series Wednesday?
Oh, Christina Ricci? Probably not.
Did he get that in under the buzzer? I think he did.
I would say so.
I'll allow it.
Yeah. Now, but is that the answer? Let's find out here. Go ahead, Katie.
All right. Question number one. How many episodes of the TV miniseries Collision are there? You said five. When is the next Canada World Cup game? You said Thursday morning. Which tobogganing hill is set to be off limits once snow falls? You said Mooney's Bay. What reality TV show did Prime Minister Justin Trudeau make an appearance on Friday? You said Canada's Drag Race. Who stars in the series Tulsa King? You said Stallone. What was the score of last night's Sens game? 3-2 is your answer. When did Prime Minister Trudeau testify at the Emergency Act inquiry? You said Friday. Question number eight. Who stars in the new Netflix series Wednesday? You originally passed and then said Christina Ricci.
Now, hold on.
Technically, he's not wrong.
Yeah, she doesn't play Wednesday, but...
That would be the series... star.
She would be... Yeah, Jenna Ortega is the star of it, but Christina Ricci is...
Yeah, but the shows have multiple stars.
But the show's called Wednesday, and...
Or you'd have to say who stars
as Wednesday.
Wednesday
in the Wednesday.
I watched the first 30 minutes and I didn't see Christina Ricci once. So.
Doesn't matter. She's all over there and we talked about her. I'm giving it to him.
Awesome. We'll give it to him.
PJ, stop being so mean.
I'm not being mean.
We're trying to give Dwayne some money here.
I all bet right. You if you watch the credits, it'll say starring and her name is one of them.
Oh, there you go. Loophole. All right. Question number
nine.
I'm
being very nice to you, Dwayne. I hope you appreciate that.
Oh, I do.
Question number nine, who is the federal health minister? You said Jean-Yves Duclos. And then last question here, how many pharmacies are there?
For $1,000.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, you're right, yeah.
For $1,000, how many pharmacies are there across Canada? I added the word approximately. He said what? For $1,000, what?
$1,000.
$1,000, is that the correct answer, PJ? Oh, no. No, it's not. And you weren't even close. It's 11,000, according to the vice president of the Ontario Pharmacies Association.
Cool.
1,000. You weren't thinking it through, Dwayne. 1,000 is not a lot of pharmacies across the country.
I know.
Oh, good job, though. 9 out of 10.
Bucks.
Congratulations.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Bill's Best Binges coming up next, The Morning Rush. Listener on the inbox brought this to my attention. We got to get on this. Did you know that you're going to pay extra property tax in Ottawa next year because you're not living in your home? It's vacant. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, well, no, I what are you talking about? I do live in my home. Doesn't matter. They're going to assume that you're living in your home, unless you tell them otherwise, unless you take action to tell them you're not leaving your home vacant. You're actually, why would you have to tell the city of Ottawa that you are living in your own home? Why aren't they assuming that? You know what? You know, I'm also not using my home as a restaurant. Should I tell them that as well? They're charging me property taxes like I'm a commercial business. What the hell are they doing? I'll tell you what they're doing. They assume a lot of people, probably a lot of older people on fixed incomes who aren't easily going to be able to go online and have the right code and tell them, oh, by the way, I swear. They're making you swear. Like they are treating you like you're a freaking liar. You're not even living in your home. You better attest to the fact that you are living in your home. You have to swear that you're not a scammer who owns a property and you're not living in it, or they're just going to assume you are a liar and a cheat, and they're going to charge you extra money. It is absolutely outrageous. Remember the cable companies tried to do this with negative billing? Well, you'll pay for this package unless you opt out of it. People were furious. That's what the city's doing right now. Unless you tell us otherwise and you swear that you are actually living in your home, we're going to assume you're not and charge you an extra 1% property tax. No, you're not. I will not be paying my property tax. You shouldn't either. We should all withhold our property tax until they change this policy. Let's dare them. Dare them to try to force us to pay something based on an assumption they're making. And here's what it is. They know that the vast majority of people in Ottawa actually live in their homes. There aren't that many vacant homes. I don't know how it solves the problem they say it's going to solve, right? Vacant homes means, you know, people have nowhere to live and the home's vacant. That's not very many. There are a few for sure. But they know that a lot of people will forget or not be capable and they'll make extra money. That is a massive cash grab. And until they swear an oath that it's not, I'm going to assume that it is. Sorry, I didn't intend to end the show with that, but somebody fired me up. Love Tulsa King, totally riveting, says one of our listeners. Bill, I want your review of Tulsa King because it doesn't look worth buying Paramount for a month. Dave and Vanya. All right, I'll check it out for you. They don't trust you, PJ, buddy. Don't trust you.
It's okay. I was right about Dairy Girls and about The Bear, so.
The Bear, I'm not even sure yet. I still haven't gone back to watch episode 3. Well, hi, Bill, about Trudeau on Drag Race, give me a break. Any respect that he had from other world leaders must be so low. I love Drag Race, and I think it would have been more appropriate to have his wife, Sophie, on the show. Why? Where the heck is Sophie these days anyway? Catherine from Ottawa. I disagree with you. Well, first of all, Sophie has no official government function. Why would she be on the show? I like that the Prime Minister did that. And I like to not like him, but I do like this. Good morning, Bill. Love starting my day listening to The Morning Rush. Rosie and Katie are smooth like silk. And Bill, you're pretty good yourself. Randy, no mention of you, PJ, there. Bill, we've been sick since the start of the school year. Between COVID closures and being homesick, we've missed so much school. Here's a great point. Bill, I wish high school would toss group projects in the winter. It's flipping impossible. The teacher forms a group, then there's always someone missing either when it's time to do the work or make the presentation. Ask your kids. I don't have to. They've been complaining about it all semester. Ask your kids if they've been missing the kid or had one missing. Absolutely. Group projects, I don't like group projects in the first place. I didn't like it when I was a kid. It was always that one person who mailed it in and did nothing, and it hurt everybody's mark, or you got a good mark anyway. No. Group projects. I know we want to teach people to work together, but I don't even like working as a group in the business world. Katie, PJ, I barely tolerate you people. Hey, can you try to get the mayor to come on about this scam to steal money from us?
I'm on it.
The property tax thing? Put a call out to him. I'm furious about this. I'd love to get your reaction. We'll talk about it again tomorrow. This has been The Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll.
You're listening to The Morning Rush.